accession number 16850, reel 4.
Mr. Gibson, reel 4.
Well, I was heading towards the MSR where I could see the Centurions, thinking, well, if I could get to the Centurions and the trucks, I'd get a lift. I was already exhausted from running over these paddies. And when I got to the MSR, the Centurions had pulled back. They were in front of us, and they were still firing up into the hills. And the ambulances were coming along, and I tried to jump on the footboard of an ambulance and got rudely pushed off. There was quite a few troops had jumped onto the ambulance. There literally was no more room. The Centurions couldn't get on board because they were already packed with chaps that had jumped on and tried to get a lift out. So I jumped into a ditch with some straggly bushes and found a load of soldiers in there from different units who were running along the ditch to keep out of the line of fire from the main road, which was under tremendous fire. It was under mortar fire, it was under rifle fire, automatic fire, definitely, because the ground was being literally ripped up. And I was dodging in and out, and I already dodged two blasts of mortars and got myself covered in mortar fragments. It penetrated mainly my hands, because I put my hands up in front of my face when they went bang. And these were the small mortars that the Chinese used to fire from the hip, literally fire them from the hip. I've seen them fire them actually from the hip. And I dived into this ditch, and there was a chap there with I don't know whether he was Northumberland or whether he was a Gloucester, but I had in my pouches, my front pouches, four Bren gun magazines, because most people carried Bren gun ammunition for the Bren gunners in the section, and these were still in my pouches. And he had a Bren gun, and they were loading up magazines as fast as he could. And when he spotted my Bren magazines, he said, "Can I have your magazines?" See? Of course, I was glad to unload them. Four full magazines of ammunition are heavy when you're running, and especially trying to run with my webbing pack on and everything else. And it was already beginning to warm up. The day was getting warm. This must have been now heading towards 10 o'clock in the morning. And I gave him the thing. I still had my old 303 and my own bandoliers of ammunition strung around my neck, the cloth bandoliers with the clips of five, and you know, 10 in each pack, two clips of five in each pocket. And so I thought, well, the only way I'm going to get out, he was firing over the paddy fields in the direction I'd just come from. And when I looked back through the gap in the bushes towards the paddy fields where I'd just run out of, I could see it was just a mass of figures moving forward. Just a mass of, like, in waves, running forward. Chinese. They were literally coming over. There must have been tens of thousands of them. And I thought, well, the only way I'm going to get out of here is keep going up the MSR to see if I can catch up with my unit. I didn't know then at that time that I found this out later, when the actual unit reached the MSR, they all went in different directions. Some took off into the hills, others tried to make it out through the gap, through the MSR, and they'd become completely disorganized. It was an every man for himself situation, and I can understand that. They literally split up into little tiny groups, and each group trying to make its own way back to their lines. So I thought, well, the only way I'm going to get out of here is get up on the MSR, to hell with the bullets and to heck with the mortars, and hope to hell to outrun this lot that were coming across the paddy fields. So I jumped up, and by that time, I couldn't care. I was exhausted. I couldn't care whether the bullets were flying, mortars were dropping. I just wanted to head up that road as fast as I could go up the road. So I ran along, and I came to a bunch of troops. I can't tell whether engineers or tank people from tanks or ambulance men, because there's a lot of ambulances burnt out. I looked inside some, and actually there was wounded in there that were dead, that were the rifle fire from the Chinese had literally torn the canvas sides of the ambulances. And I didn't see any movement on the stretchers, and I didn't linger around because the bullets were coming in thick and fast. And I, to this day, I can't understand why I didn't get hit at that point. But I had this old 303, and when I got to a point where a bunch of chaps were bunched up by a little ravine that ran off the main road, almost like a gulch running up the mountainside, and they wouldn't pass it. They were saying, there's a chap up there, and he's firing a gun down, a machine gun down. Well, actually, when I peeked round, it was a Chinese with a burp gun. He was about 100 yards up the ravine, and he was just standing there with a burp gun. And anybody who ran across the gap, he was shooting at them. So I thought, well, we can't stay here. This lot's still coming behind us. I said, can't we run across and all together and hope that, you know, he misses? No, they wouldn't go. So the only thing I could do is, I thought, well, the only way I can get out of here, there's no hope, is to run and fire from the hip up the ravine as I ran. So I'm running, cocking fire, and not stopping, cocking fire, straight up the ravine, hoping this chap would duck his head. I don't even aim at him. I could see him up there, and the fact that he did have a burp gun, and he was letting blasts of it go. He was opening up, and he was missing me, and I was missing him. So I got across the ravine, and that must have made the others think, well, this is the only way to go, to do it, to run, and hope that you could cross the opening of the ravine and get further up. And by that time, the last of the Centurions had pulled through, and they were literally packed with people who had managed to clamber on. I remember running along behind the Centurion, trying to find its telephone, because they used to have a little telephone at the back of the Centurion where you could speak to the tank commander through this little phone. I couldn't find it, but I thought, well, if I run alongside it, it's going to deflect any incoming fire from me. It's going to take the fire. So I'm running it, but then he started to really erratically swerve from one side of the thing to the other, and I looked at those tracks, those huge tracks going, and I thought, no, in a minute he's going to catch me with one of these, because he's battened down. He was literally driving with his everything down, and he's looking through a slit, literally through his visor. And the gun was still firing backwards, and the noise of that was colossal. So he pulled away from me, and I just kept running. And suddenly, in front of us, I seen three Centurions, two burning, literally burning, and exploding, ammunition inside exploding. A mass of people to one side, it looked like where the actual MSR went between them hills, just as you reached the foothills, and the hills rose up on either side, to the left and the right facing it. And I thought, I wonder, what the heck's happening here? How could Centurions be stuck here burning, two of them burning, and one just stuck with his gun stuck in a paddy field bank? He toppled over, and his gun had rammed itself into the bank, and nobody was getting out of them. Nobody was actually getting out. And then I suddenly seen groups of Chinese running up, jumping on the things and putting explosives on the tanks. Suicide squads. So they were going off. There was ambulance in the ditch on one side, in the paddy field actually. His wheels had left the road and he was tilted over. I ran up alongside him, and the driver was just slumped back with a huge hole in his leg. He was obviously dead. There was nothing I could have done for him. I ran back round the other side of the ambulance, and then suddenly I met up with another couple of riflemen. I can't remember their names, but I remember meeting one of them who was in the same section, and he said, what should we do? And we were, by that time, we were laying alongside one of the burning Centurions. and it kept exploding. I said, if we don't get out of here, that this thing's going to blow up, its ammunition's going to go, you know. It was already exploding quite severely at that point. And because then the last of the Centurions came up behind us. I remember looking round and said, get out of the way of this, because it's going to come straight through. And he actually tried to climb over the burning Centurions. The actual Centurion hit the burning ones, and we were askew across the road, askew, and tried to climb over the top of it. And he couldn't do it. He kept trying to get up and sliding off and trying to grapple over it, and so he ended up backing off and trying to run through the side. Well, what he did, when actually, in fact, he kept nudging them across the road, bulldozing them out of the way, and we were lying alongside the tracks. And of course, the darn thing kept coming at us, and I had visions of being squashed underneath this burning Centurion. But it managed to get through. It did push it out, and we scrambled away to one side, and this young lad, he was a National Service man, I remember him, a chubby-faced little chap, about the same age as myself, 18, and he says, what should we do? I said, well, if we can get past these two burning tanks and up through that gap, I said, we'll be covered by both sides of the mountain. Hopefully there'll be nobody on that side shooting at us. We get through this gap in the thing. So we said, okay, you lead the way. So we dived out and went to run forward, and suddenly burp gunners appeared in front of us, burp guns up above their heads, just spraying us. I heard the bullets thudding into this young kiddie. Well, as we tried to run forward, the burp gunners appeared, and that result was that we both got hit. I got hit, luckily, in the heel of my boot. Now, the effect of a bullet hitting your boot is to lift you off the ground, and it threw me down. I know, it was down into a puddle. It had been raining because it was April, and you had rain, and it's the last of winter, so the ground was muddy, a bit wet. Paddy field water mainly, and I remember splashing down into it. I'd heard the thuds of the bullets as they hit home, and looked to my right to see this young fellow, I can't remember his name, he was lying face down in a puddle, and he tried to lift his head up out of the puddle, and he was just sucking in great mouthfuls of water and blowing out bubbles of red. And I looked sort of aghast. I was actually sort of numb at that point. I couldn't have moved. And at that point, I was still holding my 303, and suddenly my 303 just got blown clean out of my hands. The bullet struck the stock, or struck the ran about the magazine breech area, and blew it clean out of my hands. I remember, because the painful wrench as it went from me. And I remember looking at this young chap and wondering why he wouldn't look round and get his face out of the water. He'd obviously received a fatal burst of machine gun fire, the burp gun fire. I looked up, I could see the burp gunners about 15 feet in front, brazen as you like. They stood there, three of them, all with their burp guns up. And off to their, would have been their left, my right, on the other side of the road, I could see two wounded soldiers lying, and a machine gun set up just behind them, with a Chinese heavy machine gun, like with wheels on. It's like a machine gun with old Japanese style wheels, iron wheels. And they had positioned one wounded soldier on one side, one on the other, and they were firing between from the corner of a bank. And obviously that they were using them as defence. And he was the this was the area probably of the suicide squads that had come in to stop the tanks getting out through the gap, which they'd done quite effectively, at great risk to themselves, because some of them had actually died in the attempt of stopping the Centurions. They had stopped the Centurions. The MSR was a mess. There was trucks piled up behind, ambulances piled up behind, on fire. And I remember from having a leaflet which I'd picked up, and most people had them as souvenirs, and it was Chinese propaganda leaflets that had been strewn around the battlefield, and on it was, you know, you United Nations personnel, we know you want to give up, you know, you'll be well treated if you lay down your arms, raise your hands and shout Tao Shong. This is the Chinese for surrender. I always remember that because we used to laugh about it a few days before. We'd be laughing about it. Who's going to be the one to shout Tao Shong? And I thought, as I lay on the ground in front of these burp gunners, well, if I don't put my hands up and shout Tao Shong, they're going to just stitch me up with their guns, because I was right in the open. I'd already fallen in the puddle. We were had no defence in front of us. It was like a last mad dash for the gap, and then suddenly I heard troops behind these burp gunners in a ditch shouting, "Put your hands up! Put your hands up!" It was people who had already been taken prisoner, who'd already been caught as they tried to get out through the gap, the earlier one. And there was about 15 or 20 of them, and they were shouting, "For Christ's sake, put your hands up," you know. So I put my hands up, shouted Tao Shong as best I could, and you know, and they beckoned me forward, and I had to join this group of about 20 or more POWs. They were POWs at that point, and I was too. Around about that time, the last another Centurion came up, and it was loaded with troops clinging from every handhold, and they managed to get round these burning Centurions, because the previous Centurion had to push it out slightly off the road so that there was a gap, and he went through the gap, and as he passed the machine gunners on the left side where the prisoners were and where we were as a group of about 25 to 30 people with about six Chinese burp gunners stood over us. He tried to get through the gap, and he was swinging his gun round. And I often remember his gun swung round and aimed straight down the ditch where we were as he was moving forward. And we were all shouting and waving, "Don't fire, don't fire! We're troops, British troops," because he didn't want him to open up, thinking that because he seen the burp gunner stood there that. We were all Chinese. Luckily, he didn't fire. The grace of God, I don't know why the chap kept his finger off the trigger in the melee. He must have heard us or something above the noise of the battle. But I could see the burp gunners just firing in on top of the tank, and it was covered with people hanging on. And literally, they were raking the thing from side to side, from both sides. The heavy machine gunner on the other side, where the two POWs were, the wounded men, was firing straight onto the tank, and the other burp gunners, half a dozen of them, were firing and raking the thing from side. You could actually see the people on there literally bouncing as the bullets hit them. But nobody fell off. I don't know. But the tank then disappeared through the gap and headed off south. Now, what happened to it further on, of course, I don't know, because at that point we were POWs and we were subject to the whims of the Chinese. That period was very mind-boggling. We were all terrified. People were pulling their bayonets out of their scabbards and burying them in the ground in case the Chinese took it out on them for having bayonets in their scabbards. Other people were burying pistols that they'd had, ammunition which they had, they didn't want to be caught with. And then, about 2 or 3 minutes after after I'd been caught at that point, waves and waves of Chinese troops came racing through. Now, they came at a heck of a rate. They were running, carrying heavy machine guns, carrying mortars, even carrying... one came running through carrying a rice pot, a huge great rice pot strapped to his back for cooking their meals. And he was armed as well with a rifle or a Tommy gun. Some of them had the old Russian style Tommy guns, and a lot of them had the burp gun. The burp gun was very distinctive because of its long magazine and the frilling that was air cooling system that was around the barrel. Rather snub nosed looking things, actually. And they were racing up the hill that we were stuck at. We were in the ditch at the base of the hill, and they were racing up. So they'd already overrun the whole of the Imjin Valley, and there obviously it was a major push. And I found out later it was a major Chinese offensive. I think the Allies had been expecting it, but information never trickled down to the ordinary soldier, and you know, in the trench. Just that, be on your guard, there's a Chinese offensive, and that's about it, you know. I think we were really sacrificed. I've got that feeling that we were sacrificed in the defence of Seoul, because as you know from the and I don't take nothing from the Gloucesters. If the Gloucesters fought as heroically as history makes out, they deserved everything that they could get. They got the citation. And the citation was that they had stalled the Chinese so that the Allies could reform a new line at Seoul, and that the Ulster Rifles had also done the same. They'd out of our complete unit, I think nearly 60%, 50-60% were the casualties or prisoners, and with the Gloucesters, I think it was all 100%. Total loss. Anyway, at that period, that was a period right at the point of the battle, at the height of the battle, as I know it, the Imjin River battle, and that was my participation in it, because after that, of course, it was the usual Chinese rear troops catching up. Us being handed over to the Chinese rear troops, who weren't the best of people. To me, they looked more like gangsters from the slums of Peking or Canton or somewhere like that. But they soon relieved us of every valuable we possessed. They took everything they could grab, watches, they ripped them off your arm. My camera went when they turfed out my satchel, my backpack. The small backpack, they turfed that out. Cigarettes they took, my camera they took, they even took my watch off my arm, ripped it off. Anything that they thought took their fancy, and they weren't inclined to argue about it. If you tried to hang on to it, you got the butt end of a rifle in your face. Having been thoroughly stripped of everything, our webbing, we were down to just what you were wearing. I was wearing a pullover at that time, the standard issue Korean green pullover for United Nations service, and my boots, trousers, and a wool cap, you know, the old scarf made into a wool berry. So that was it. That's all I had. And they marched us from one valley to another, totally confused us. We marched first one way, and then they made us all sit down in a line. There was by then about 50 of us. And they made us snap off branches from trees, firs, and hold them above our heads. Apparently this was because the American planes were coming in. And we were still in sight of the original plane, the MSR. We could see the tanks still burning on the MSR. And all of a sudden, these fighter planes came screaming in, you know, and their sole object was to eliminate the tanks to avoid the Chinese getting anything from them. Of course, they fired rockets and they hit the tanks, those that hadn't, that were still burning and the ones that weren't burning, and they literally pulverized the tanks with rocket fire. And there was somebody screaming out in the front. He had his legs cut off because we couldn't see his legs, and we asked the Chinese guards, could we go to him, and they wouldn't let us go to him. And the Chinese then, after the air raid had passed, the Chinese swarmed out again and started taking our any ordnance that was lying around, weapons, collecting them up, pulling in any straggler prisoners. They actually let that chap die. They never went to his aid. They wouldn't let us go to his aid. And I remember a medical officer who must have been travelling in one of the ambulances that had been knocked out. I can't remember his name. And we were all stood there, and he was asking the able-bodied to check the wounded, if there's wounded. And I remember this chap, he'd had a piece of shrapnel go in through his cheek, and the medical officer looked at him and said to me, will you look to see what's making him, his eyes are rolling in his head, and it's very grey. He said, just check to see if he's wounded. So I'm checking him, and I'm asking this young chap, are you wounded anywhere? He says, you know, because I can't see any wound, I can't see anything. All of a sudden he vomited blood all over my pullover, and a whole, as if he had a complete vomit, and it was all blood, congealed blood, and apparently a piece of shrapnel had gone in his cheek, cut underneath his tongue, and exited out the other side, and with the gushing blood coming out from under his tongue, he was swallowing it, and he made himself so full of blood he was then physically sick, and he'd gone grey. when he'd vomited all this blood out, he was as right as rain after that, except he had a very sore mouth and a very badly damaged under his tongue. But we put a half of a field dressing, ripped up and packed it underneath his tongue so that he could keep it down and sop up the blood. And they marched us various places during the day, that for the rest of that day. We had no water bottles, they'd all gone, they'd taken them. We had no rations, hardly any of us had any cigarettes. The only ones that were lucky enough had them in their breast pockets of their shirts. They took us to a farmhouse, a Korean farmhouse, and I remember we were pushed into like a barn type thing with guards on the door, and we were all very, very frightened. I mean, we were all shocked and frightened. We all wondered what was going to happen next. I remember that. And we stayed there. It got dark. They hadn't, none of the guards came in. They were all stood outside the doors, jabbering away, Chinese, which we couldn't understand. And I remember then, suddenly somebody came in with a tilly lamp. Chinese, with a tilly, actually one of them gas operate, pump up tilly lamp. Probably one of ours that caught on the supplies. And because they were very adept at using our stuff that we abandoned. And he started to shout and harangue us in Chinese. And then an officer came in. I remember an officer, because how we did.